From the office to a first date, there's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every situation. But clothes don't make the man. With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting and tells the world that you stay you wherever you go. They combine timeless style with modern performance materials to keep you looking good and feeling comfortable all day, no matter what's on today's agenda. Browse everything from shorts and polos to sweats and crews. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com, promo code MACK25.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. 1959, On the Beach, a novel by Neville Schutz, a first-rate aeronautical engineer building rigid-frame airships once upon a time. But he wrote a story that was based upon the expectation of what nuclear weapons could do to the planet Earth and the population of Homo sapiens. You will recall, if you've ever seen it or heard about it, an American submarine is headed south to Australia. Why? Because it's probably the last warfighting unit left in the North Temperate Zone. And it's been ordered to report to the admiral left standing in Australia's Navy. The Australians are still alive, but there's a cloud of something undescribed to do with radioactivity heading south. And there's a number of months before Australia is also overwhelmed and everybody's going to die. Everybody's already dead back in the North Temperate Zone. Stars Gregory Peck as the captain of the ship, Ava Gardner as the woman who will fall in love with him when he touches upon Australia, Fred Astaire as a spectacular race car driver, Anthony Perkins as a worthy father who must convince his wife and his baby to commit suicide rather than die of radiation sickness. It's black and white, and it's grim, and it's convincing, especially if you're 11 or 12 years old, which is what I was. So I was certain that the world was going to end with the way that On the Beach said it was. It didn't happen. Gregory, you recall On the Beach as well. Did you think the world was going to end that way?
No. For some reason, I was a perpetual optimist. And later, after I'd read the book and seen the movie, as a youngster, I was in Melbourne. I'm from Perth, about 2,500 miles away. But I went to Melbourne where the film was shot. And I saw downtown Melbourne on a Sunday, and I realized that they didn't even need to clear the streets to make the movie, because Melbourne on a Sunday was absolutely dead and empty, and that was the end of the world anyway. But the reality was that we knew enough within a few years to know that we're not going to get that concentration of nuclear fallout which would destroy society as we saw it, or as it was portrayed in On the Beach. It's people getting these singular ideas of an apocalypse and then extrapolating it to totally dominate the consciousness of the population. And we've seen this time and time again. We've been, throughout history, been cowed by the threat of apocalypse after apocalypse, each of which has come to naught. But each has diverted societies and the governance and strategic outcomes. So these apocalyptic visions absolutely have strategic outcomes. We saw that even with the Children's Crusade in the 13th century, for example, just galvanizing Europe to go to war against again in the Holy Land. But we've seen it particularly in the last 50 years or so, one thing after another. It's nuclear winter, it's global warming, it's climate change, and this is, it brooks no discussion. You just have to be taken up by the fear. If you're not gripped by the fear, there's something wrong with you, and you are denying your responsibility for stopping this next apocalypse. And there's been one thing after another. If it's not those sort of climate change, it's the fact that we now find that the family unit, for example, or national identity are the things which are going to bring about the end of the world, and we have to stop them one way or another. We were going to run out of food in the 1960s, you recall. The Club of Rome kept saying that we couldn't produce enough food. And yet we went on not only to produce enough food for the entire world, we were able to distribute it, and we were able to increase the average per capita caloric intake of people around the world. So generally, people around the world got healthier. Yes, there were still exceptions. There's still patches in how this is delivered. But we found that we could deliver enough food, enough calories to make people healthier. We could make people wealthier. There was no limit to how we could overcome these problems. And yet, every one of these crises has been such that we're all going to die. The earth is going to fall on us. We were going to create so many human beings in the world that we would run out of space, we would run out of food, we would run out of oxygen. And yet none of these things happened. We saw, in fact, even while these apocalypses were being forecast, that the natural cycle of human reproduction kicked in, and people ceased to have as many children. We saw that the baby boomers, particularly in the Western world, but also in places like China, failed to replace themselves. In other words, they didn't have enough children so that the population would continue to grow. We saw that with efficiencies, we could not only get enough fuel, we could get enough food, we could get enough water to take care of all of our needs. Now, as it happens, the cycle of population growth has ended, and we're now starting to see this decline. You bear in mind that the United Nations was wringing its hands a few years ago, saying that the population was going to get up to 9, 10 billion by the end of this century, and it's not looking like it's going to get anywhere near that. Quite the contrary, it's going to reduce. But we are seeing, because of this incredible apocalyptic thinking, that we've destroyed a lot of our communal methodology, for a better word, want of a better word. Our supply chain is being interrupted, not because we can't grow enough food, but because we've taxed ourselves in such ways that we can't get enough trucks on the road or ships at sea to deliver it to where it's needed to go.
Responsibility? Yes, we are. Where's the responsibility for answering back when an 11-year-old watches a movie and is certain that I'm going to die of radiation poison? Is there an office or is there a group of people who... You call them national security professionals. Well, they let us down because they went along with the idea that the world was going to end with nuclear exchange. And that's out there again. Putin talks that way. He was educated in the Cold War as well. And he rattles out nuclear weapons as if he's going to use them. And nobody's standing up and saying this is foolishness.
Well, I think even Putin is saying it's foolishness, because the West itself, including the U.S. government, has talked about the increased nuclear preparedness to face Russia, and that nuclear weapons might be needed to face down the Russian threat, all of which is nonsensical. But what I do a lot of lecturing, as you know, to very senior national security professionals in the United States and elsewhere on a regular basis, in fact, almost weekly. And I find that very few of them know anything about the realities of nuclear warfare or nuclear warfare planning. The so-called national security professionals have let us down, not just in that field, but in others as well. But in the nuclear area, they don't know anything about nuclear warfare. They haven't studied the texts which were prepared when nuclear warfare was being considered as a viable part of a normal kinetic warfare. There were real plans drawn up to say what would be practical, what would not be practical, when is the best time to use something, what's the best yield you need for certain weapons on the battlefield and the like. Nobody even looks at that anymore with any comprehensive view. They don't see where nuclear weapons fit into the grand strategy or even the overarching military strategy. And perhaps They are, in fact, what a lot of the nuclear strategists like Stefan Bersony came up with was the fact that nuclear weapons are not war-winning weapons, by and large. Yes, they can help in certain instances, but by and large, they are just very large explosives, and they can be counterproductive in that when you need to use them on the battlefield, you can't actually move your troops into consolidate after a great nuclear explosion. So you can't go in and consolidate the gains you've made. So therefore, there's not much point in having this massive explosion if you can't then follow up and consolidate your conquest of the adversary. So there are many things like that which nobody bothers to think about anymore. And when you discuss them with senior national security professionals, with lots of stars on their shoulders, they revert to discussions which are almost movie-like in their their panic. The sky is falling theory. We'll have an all-out nuclear war, and that'll be the end of everything. Well, no, it won't. Largely because, to a degree, it won't happen. But also because, if and when some aspects of it happen, they will not be as critical or decisive. And they may be counterproductive, so that we're not going to see this automatic end of conflict being brought about by someone dropping 1, 2, 3, or 100 nuclear weapons.
What about food security? Do we have a comparable way to answer back? Because we have plenty of instances where food security was quickly followed by food abundance. Is anyone answering back about climate change in a similar fashion?
Well, I think they're starting to. I think we're now starting to see more skepticism on the apocalyptic climate change forecasts than we've seen in the past 20 years. But the bottom line is somebody's got to say, well, what was it that Al Gore was saying about New York being flooded within 15 years? And that was, 30 years ago? And so many things that all the polar bears in the world are going to die. And now there is almost three times as many as there were 20 years ago. We're seeing all of these complaints. So we can't even get a rational debate on the environment, which is critical, because people want to categorize you as either embracing the climate change apocalyptic view, or to say that you're a climate change denier. So there's no rational discussion about anything. But I think it behooves us to keep looking at what we've been warned about for the past 50 years and see just how much of it has come to pass, and very little of it. I mean, the thought of the pandemics as being the end of humanity. We've seen many movies about it over the years, and we saw the latest COVID scare wasn't the end of humanity or anything like it, and yet it's caused a misdirection of social functions. It caused a misdirection of governance. It caused governments to suspend democratic rights and to basically introduce autocracy into otherwise free countries like the United States, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, Western Europe, and the like.
And we see a resentment of that in the European Union vote. Again and again, we hear from the parties that they're not interested in net zero if it's going to be unaffordable and deprive them of independence. Net zero is a way of talking about climate change. They also resent the mandates of the pandemic. They just resent it. I don't know that we have to prove the resentment. They found that they were misled. And I think that to take us back to the beginning of the European Union vote, collectively, they've all said, no, we don't trust you. And that's okay, Gregory. That's an example of democracy at work. Do you agree?
Absolutely. But what we find is that there are so many means being used to thwart democracy that we're not seeing any clarity in that. But I do think that, for example, we're going to see another thing being dismissed in the coming maybe 5 years. I don't think we will see these mandates to have fleets of all or totally only electric cars in the world coming to fruition. I think we're going to see Yes, there'll be some electric cars, as there were in 1900. There'll be some hybrid cars. There'll be some diesel. There'll be some petroleum cars and the like. But, you know, this attempt to use apocalyptic visions to regulate societies is one of the things that I think we're seeing this great rebellion about. Right. And it's not just about electric vehicles. It's about literally everything, the imposition of bureaucracies in order to stop the free movement of society in doing what it needs to do, a free marketplace.
It's one interpretation of the European Union vote. There will be others, but right now it does tie together the protests in all these different languages, in all these different states, 27 states, all going in one direction, which is not yet. They're not yet ready to concede their sovereignty. We're going to another version of sovereignty, the King Charles Report, when we come back. This is Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. I'm John Nash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.